Well, thank you, Jonathan, for that. And I'd like to echo Jonathan's thanks to Dougal and the Foundation for convening this debate. As Jonathan said, I've got a very easy job at ONS, and I mean, this week is a good week of easiness. So we had government debt and deficit yesterday, we've had prices today, we've got shopping tomorrow, and we've got GDP itself on Friday, where we may hear more about what the snow did or did not do to the economy. So just thinking about what we're producing this week made me go back to first principles and think about what is this question asking us? Now, I know what GDP is, but what do we really mean when we talk about economic growth? What is it we're trying to capture? And I think it's quite a basket of things. So to understand how well GDP stands up, we need to think, what is that collective set of questions? Which I think growth kind of feels a little bit one-dimensional to me. The idea of prosperity feels a little bit richer. So what are we trying to get at? In John's introduction, when he kind of talked a little bit in more lay terms about that, to Britain's place in the world. How do we compete? How do we compare with other countries? What are the risks and opportunities for us, particularly as we're thinking in a kind of global Britain sense about what the future might hold? What do we really think about the industrial strategy? How do we improve innovation and enterprise and drive the country forward in a way that makes all of us prosperous? Very prosaically, how do we make sure we're gathering enough tax so we can pay for the health service and other services and think about redistribution? How do we understand whether prosperity is for everyone or just a few people? Issues of inequality and how certain groups in the country are being left behind or are surging ahead. These ideas of prosperity and how they are perceived in different parts of the country matter too. And then finally, how sustainable is this prosperity? Sustainable perhaps over our individual life courses and the discussion around the kind of intergenerational issues at the moment, how we fare as we move into old age and become less capable, how disabled people might fare through their lives, whether they have access to employment or not. But at the macro level, sustainability of the economy, are we depleting our resources? Are we behaving in a way that will enable prosperity to be compromised in the future? So the test for me is, whether GDP is a good measure, is how well it fares against those kinds of ideas. Now, for a long period of time, it's fared very well, and it is brilliant, and Jonathan has captured it in a fantastically distilled way. Anything that can be captured through the medium of price is there in GDP. It is a complete articulation of everything people earn, everything people spend, everything people produce. It enables you to link the domestic and international economy of the UK and then compare that to all other countries. It can enable you to look over very long periods of time about how well it's succeeding. It enables you to break it down by different industries, different income groups, a whole range of things. It is brilliant. I echo Jonathan. Do not get rid of it, people. It serves those purposes very well. But it has also always had its detractors. Certainly during my career, it's had its detractors. In the 70s, it was the Club of Rome and the oil shock that brought the idea of environmental degradation into the picture. GDP does not capture that very well. In the 80s, it was monetarism, the rise of the financial sector, the Big Bang. Are we really capturing what that is doing to the economy? In the 90s, on the back of the 80s, it was about inequality and social exclusion. How are we really understanding who's getting left behind in this big picture? And then the dot-com bubble, the rise of digital. How do we get that? Jonathan's given us a hint a bit about that. And then since the crash, the recent crash, this puzzle, the productivity puzzle, what is really going on? So those questions have always been there, and that means we need to think beyond GDP, because GDP will not be able to answer all of those questions. Because frankly, a lot of them are not about economics. They're about how we live our lives. And we should not try to boil them down to something which is a quantity and a price. But we do need to understand them. So I'm going to break down my remarks into two segments. How we make GDP better so it is actually fit for the purpose that it can really meet. And then how do we complement GDP so we can see it in the context of these broader social, environmental and other questions? So how do we make GDP better? Many people have said that GDP is very good at measuring the things that were important 20 or 30 years ago. And it kind of is, because it follows a set of international standards, and that's how it meets the test of being something that is internationally harmonised. But the last revision of the system of national accounts dates from 2008, and it took several years to get to that. So none of the considerations in there have taken on board anything that happened in 2007, 2008 and beyond. So it's not surprising that in following international standards we are looking at yesterday's economy. But that clearly is not good enough. And Charlie Bean's report that Jonathan has recognised has kind of unpacked a bit about why it's not good enough. And there are several levels to this. At the most straightforward level, we need to keep running to catch up with what's happening in the segments of the economy we think we do understand. So the retail sector, well, we started collecting before there were Amazon warehouses. How do we make sure we really are capturing what is happening in those warehouses? What is being produced? How are they being consumed? Basic mechanics of just finding out where they are and simple things like registers of businesses that enable us to find them really matter. But then what is the value they're creating? How do we unpack that? And that's just retail. You think of that in almost any other sector. Innovation is challenging the meaning of that sector and how it is creating value, how it is adding to the prosperity of the country. So we need to keep ahead of that curve, thinking about what's coming down the track and work out the measurement instruments and the sources of data that will help us understand that. Second thing we need to do is think of some of the kind of sectors that were not really thought about properly. I mean, part of this was in the last system of national accounts, but the issue of research and development that Jonathan has highlighted, intellectual property, intangible assets. If you look at the balance sheets of most of the significant, certainly the most of the significantly growing companies, they are dominated by some of these things that were really not significant many years ago when the assets were much more physical. And we need to understand how knowledge is creating value, how things like patents are creating value, how research and investment really is manifesting itself, and how we then capture that in the GDP framework. Kind of allied to that, but not quite the same as that, is just this whole digital thing. And it has changed our lives. It's certainly changed my life. But a lot of it isn't quite paid for. A lot of it isn't really economic. It's disintermediating a lot of services. Airbnb was mentioned, that's probably the simplest one to mention, but just how we're walking around, looking at a map on our phone and those kinds of things. The value we're getting from that is quite hard to really capture in a mechanism that's designed just to look at quantities and prices. And those are within the market sector, but a significant part of our economy is the public sector. How do you capture that? Because they're not priced goods, but they clearly are kind of goods where money changes hands. The NHS costs money. We need to include that within the framework. But how do we understand the productivity of the NHS, the justice system, the education system, any bits of the public sector? How do we incorporate those into GDP? We've done some great work over many, many years thinking about that, and the UK is generally seen as being world-leading, but we are nowhere near as good as we need to be. Tony Atkinson did some fantastic conceptual work 15 years or so ago, but we're not really nearer the prize, I don't think, than we were then. So we need to improve all of those things substantively, which covers pretty much every sector of the economy. But then across all of that, we need to understand this idea of price. It's so easy to think about. But the Hoover's example, you just sit down. I think I can honestly say it's been the most challenging intellectual job I ever had as an analyst, working on prices at ONS. How you work out what is really going on. And Hoover's is actually quite straightforward. You think of almost any other product, you've really got to think quite hard about what is the economic meaning of this change that's happened. So to make GDP useful, as an indicator of economic growth. We must improve it. And we have an agenda in the areas that I've outlined that will help us do that. But let's not try and make it do everything. So the kinds of areas that we are looking at that will help us think about how to do it, how to complement GDP, are, first of all, looking at these things that are just outside the production boundary. So I've talked about the environment a bit. And so for 20 or 30 years now, we've been trying to understand the idea of natural capital, trying to understand both the stocks but also the flows into and out of the environmental system and how they interact with the economy. So you can have what we describe as a satellite account that sits alongside the national accounts that enables you to see what is happening to the economy as measured by GDP alongside what is happening to the environment. And there are a series of satellites that allow you to look at one part of the account in relation to the national accounts and GDP. The household account would be another one where there's a significant investment now to help us understand questions like how human capital is interacting both with the market economy and the non-market economy. And the digital revolution has shifted, I think, a pattern that had been going for a long time. So during most of last century, the household sector was getting larger as we were buying more stuff from the market rather than doing it ourselves. Childcare, transport, cooking, we were doing less of it. But that's gone into reverse, partly due to the digital revolution. And our latest estimate has put the household sector at 56% added on to GDP, up from 52% just 15 years ago. So that in itself, if you adjusted for it, would account for some of the squeeze on GDP. So looking at these satellites helps us understand GDP in context of other things where pricing it is not necessarily always the best thing to do. The second area where I think we can look differently about what we're trying to measure is this idea of welfare, which also butts up against GDP, but is slightly different from it. An economist would call it consumer surplus. What is the extra value we are getting over and above the price we pay? So free goods are a particular case in point here, but there's a whole bunch of other free goods that aren't things like Facebook and Skype and all of that lot. There's things like feeling safe on our streets. There's things like some of these things you can capture, but things like beauty, things that make us feel that we are getting, we are having something that we value that we can't necessarily put a price on. So even if we attempt to put a price on it in monetary value, it's going to be very, very influenced by who we are and what we believe in, what we think is important. So the consumer surplus that different people get from those kinds of goods is quite positioned in the person or the community we're talking about. Linked to that, but slightly different from it, is the idea of well-being. And this is something we've put a lot of effort into over a period of time now. So we've got six years of data that quite interestingly shows generally a rising trend across most parts of the population, but picks out issues like anxiety, picks out the much vaunted question of happiness. But these things are interesting and give you a context to look at economic measures against. The next area that I'd highlight where we're putting increasing investment in is inequality, how prosperity is experienced by different people in different stages of their lives. So I've mentioned the issue of health and disability, understanding what it is like, what prosperity means if you are in that part of the community, but different racial groups, people living in different towns and communities across the country. We need to think about that diversity of experience and find something that is meaningful for them. Because it is undoubtedly the case, I think, that some people just do not see themselves in the macro GDP measures that we currently put out. And then finally, and most ambitiously of all, the complementary measures of the Sustainable Development Goals that the UN agreed to 3 years ago, setting out 17 goals, 169 targets, and 232 indicators that across the world would be measured to ensure that by 2030, no one was left behind. Now, we are seeking to populate that, but it has economic measures, along with social measures, along with environmental measures, along with some of these measures of trust and community cohesion. So you get a dashboard of all these things coming together. So let's keep GDP. Let's invest in the complementary measures. But as we do so, I think there are three criteria I'd want us to hold in mind. The first one is the international one. We cannot do this alone as the UK, because we don't sit alone as a country. Think broadly and work with our colleagues across the world. Second one is to innovate and look ahead. Let's measure today's and tomorrow's economy and society, not yesterday's. The third one is this issue of inequality. Let's really think how our measures resonate with people across the country. And I think the Brexit vote makes you pause to think, are our current measurements actually a reality in terms of how people understand prosperity? And we have to ask that question. So I close then with maybe something I would say, wouldn't I? If we're thinking about investing in intangible assets, what better intangible assets to invest in than our statistical system that will help us measure this and hopefully make better decisions for the country in the years ahead? Thank you very much.